This podcast is brought to you by Ideate and Execute. Do you want to drive innovation in your organization, futurize your enterprise, ideate massively valuable new products, or execute them to market? Then contact us today at ideateandexecute.com and get started.
Why listen to the past when you can listen to the future? Welcome to the Think Future podcast, broadcasting from deep in the heart of Silicon Valley, California. We focus on innovation, startups, and the future, not necessarily those and not necessarily in that order. Here's your host.
Hello? Oh, you're on mute.
Of course I'm on mute.
How are you?
Okay, so how are you?
Good. It's just like Zoom call after Zoom call. Sorry, I'm a couple minutes late.
No, it's fine. It's the same. And which is also funny as to why would I still be on mute? It's just something that happens all the time.
Yeah. Well, it happens to me all the time. It's like you have mute on your headphone, you have mute on Zoom, you have mute on your mixer. You're just like, it's always something.
But I've made it a small game where whatever I said, I have to try to repeat with the same energy and excitement that I used the first time to say it. It keeps me interested, keeps me involved.
Well, I find that sometimes whenever that happens to me, it's like I've done it the first time and then the next time I actually do it better. So it's like do-overs sometimes are really good.
Exactly.
So tell me a little bit about yourself and your organization and what you're passionate about. We'll go from there.
Okay. A little bit about myself. I'm originally from Harlem, New York. I was actually born in Harlem Hospital. So I like to say that because that was around 1978. And so it was an interesting time. we moved into the 80s. Living in New
Every
York.
Every time is an interesting time.
Right. Living, you know, in New York City during the 80s, in early 90s, as you can imagine, creates a trauma point, for lack of a better term. had a large, relatively large family. I have three brothers, three sisters. I'm in the middle, at number five. So, you know, that afforded me some things. I could experiment more than the other kids.
You didn't have the firstborn responsibility sort of thing, like not. I did.
Oh, sorry, man.
That's all right.
There were three girls born.
Like, forget about him. He can do whatever he wants.
Right. Right. So that's kind of what happened. So three girls were born first, and then the boys started. And then four boys came after that.
Wow.
Yeah. Exactly. Education was a big thing from my grandma, not really from, interestingly enough, my mom was more so of the, she was the youngest of 13. So she was the rebel out of
big families, right. Big families. You don't see that anymore.
No, not at all. I have one.
And one's then, enough. Two is enough, right. For me.
Oh, right. And then, so we'll get into that later. From the past, I went to school in New York, public education. I'm a product of public education in New York City, public education. I did end up going to the private school route. I ended up at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York.
Congratulations. Thank you.
Appreciate that. It's been an interesting run. There I dealt with some things that I wasn't used to because I'm pretty much a scientist in everything that I do, right? Everything is based on, you know, zero and one, true or false. It's not really much else with me. But there I encountered,
right? You believe in reality.
Yes, right? And that's what I try to come back to whenever I'm being drawn into some psychological drama that's being created at any moment, right? So I dealt with some of that, some psychological drama at Cornell, some, you know, racial slurs being thrown. And so I really didn't I couldn't understand what was happening to me because I didn't really see it always seemed stupid, to be the lack of a better term. It just seemed stupid. And so when you realize reality, when you work in reality, you don't, yeah. I don't understand it, right? So so in order for me to understand it, I actually then changed my degree. I actually went for a degree in Africana, thinking that this is what I was supposed to do to get this understanding. Mm-hmm. So after that, I ran into, you only went to Ivy League, you only got in because of affirmative action. Oh, and your degree is in Africana, which is like, oh, what are you going to do with that? And what are you going to write a book? What are you going to become a professor? Like, how are you going to make any money at that? And then, are you really smart, right? Like, all of these things. And I didn't really see that when I was making a choice, making a decision. I didn't really see that. I saw some people's reaction, like, especially my mom. because I originally went to become a pediatrician.
You should be a doctor or a lawyer. I mean, Canada, it was like, oh, you should be a doctor or a lawyer or a hockey player. Like, I can't be a hockey player.
Right. For me, I'm 6'5". So nice. I'm 6'5". My older sister, she was at NYU. She's in the Hall of Fame at NYU for basketball. So that was totally the expectation. Are you going to play a sport or, you know, like, or the doctor, right? And so I did, I'm going to be the doctor. Okay. And then go there, have that experience. Nope, I need to understand what's happened. Then seeing the results of that, and it's the response, well, I'm not going to live the rest of my life like defending my choices. Or like, so I was like, okay, so what am I going to do? So afterwards, I become a Section 8 caseworker, right? Because my professors told me, you have to go before you make all the money, go and give back to the community, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. The weird part for me was, psychologically, I went from a family being on Section 8 to now being a caseworker for Section 8, right?
So, both sides of it. You saw both sides of it.
Exactly. Seeing no families with like no savings accounts, no investment accounts. The people that I was working with in my department, they didn't have any 401k, 401k set up. And so that was my first thing when I got into the job was, I'm walking around like, I'm going to like make all this difference in the world, and I'm going to start right into my department. So I got everybody to open up their retirement account. Nice. And I started.
You're a change maker from day one. I love it.
I try to get my clients, the folks on Section 8, to invest the money. And they're looking at me like, are you insane? How am I going to buy stocks and bonds? I mean, I don't know how I'm going to pay my rent from 1 month to the next. And I was like, so I would always say, well, don't you buy McDonald's? And so, because that's always the thing, right? Everyone always has money for McDonald's. But no one like calculates at the end of the month how much money that actually turns into and what that dollar can then make for you. But that was an uphill battle. And so I realized
we don't teach personal finance in school or anywhere, really. I mean, who knows personal finance? It's like by the time you get to the college or wherever you go, it's like nobody knows anything about personal finance. You've already spent a lot of money. You could have saved all that.
Yes. Right. And so we're looking at this. And so, you know, I looked at it like it was a major problem because I took that problem and put it across everyone. Right. Everyone that was Black or brown, I was like, this has to be a thing. Because the data that I was working with, in reality, I was in a department where it was mostly Black people and none of them had a retirement account. Huh? Wait, what? And then, you know, my family's, everyone's looking at me like, I just can't do that. Right. So that was really emotionally taxing. And so I wanted to figure out something. I felt I was going to burn out. I wasn't going to be able to keep going doing that. And so, one day we bought a new software package for the department. And so I learned the software package and was teaching the other folks. And I wanted to get out of there at the same time. And so I asked the person training us if they had any openings at the company. He said, well, actually I'm leaving. And I just watched you help train everyone after I trained you. So how about you take my position? Cause I'm going to New Mexico on like for a spiritual, I guess.
Well, that's where you go for spiritual journeys is New Mexico, right?
Exactly. right. And that was my foray into tech. And Interestingly enough, it was working for a company that provided the housing assistance payment program to manage money for Section 8 housing authorities. So my Africana degree worked in this regard, plus the reference that I got from him. Once I got in, I realized I had to like take it to another level. And so I used community college, actually Hudson Valley Community College, to strengthen my tech skills. And then that ran its course. I ended up back in New York City working at Kaplan Test Prep and Admissions, which is a multi-billion dollar company. And I really wanted, I was the senior technical project manager in charge of bringing them into the 21st century, where this was before Netflix, right? Before like any of like those major streaming providers. So I had to figure out how to take all those DVDs and then create a flash player and then literally stream. Yeah. All right. I had to like take those digital assets and stream them within each of the centers, right? So that was a fun project. That was around the globe. But I started to notice that I wasn't being asked to the big boy table, and I wanted to get to the big boy table. And so I had to make the choice on what was I going to do next, because that Africana degree, this was the ceiling, right? I was in e-learning, you know, it only goes but so far in e-learning. I ended up going back to Chicago, going to Northwestern, getting my engineering degree from there, graduating summa cum laude. And, nice. And that kind of, opened up the doors. I became the director of IT for Urban Prep Academies, which is an all boys charter school for African-American youth. It's supposed to be for everyone, you know. I just have to be careful on what I say, I think. It was a very long time ago. And then moved on from there to the largest charter school network in Chicago, which is the Noble Network of Charter Schools. And it was the, we built maybe 11 additional schools after I jumped on board there. Managed a team of like 18 individuals, was really in, intentional about hiring Black and brown techs, because the industry just didn't say that. And so we were serving a majority of Black and brown students. And so I figured if we were telling them the message that if you go to college, you can get a good job, and get a good job, you'll be able to pay for your family and your family needs, we should be able to show them that. We should be able to show them that and the people that's working around them. And so, as you can imagine,
you need role models, right? And you need the role model to be there, because if you think about it, if you just see somebody like, some famous celebrity, you know, you feel like you're so far away from them, there's no way you can get to where they are. But if you've got role models in your life who are, you know, closer to where you are, and you can see how they've progressed to where they are, I mean, that's a really powerful message, right?
One of the most powerful. And it's something that, you know, now that I'm at the, once again, back at the community college in this position, this is something that I'm seeing is like, one of the most important parts of it. So all of that work, I hope it sounded like a lot of work. Also, started some businesses, right?
Sounds like a hell of a lot of work. When did you? Right?
Started a nonprofit called Bridging the Gap. We won a $50,000 grant to start the Nature, Technology, and Tomorrow Initiative.
Oh, congratulations, that's great. That's fantastic. Thank you.
We built an app that cataloged the native and non-invasive species of the Sand Ridge Nature Center. That was like, and started walkathons. Yeah, it was fascinating. I said all that to say, this led to my divorce, right? Like,
oh, no.
Yeah, so all this great stuff is happening, but I'm not aware. I'm not aware of the social part. Remember I talked about everything zero and one for me,
right, black right. and white. Well, you're a scientist, right? I mean, that's the problem with us, technologists, scientists. We focus on, the science and the technology, but it's like when it comes to relationships, it's like, oh, we're totally useless, or at least I am. Right.
Exactly. And that's how I ended up in California. I ended up in California with just my car and sleeping in the bedroom of my niece. In my brother's house, my older brother, and my brother's house, where I was, that was now my new command center for my new life, whatever new life I was going to create in California, which happened to be, and 5 minutes away from Moreno Valley College. So now I'm sitting in this new, I became a beach bum. And so I ran around and I'm trying to get my social side back. And
you're doing a spiritual journey. You can do a spiritual journey on the beach too.
Dude, I'm trying to, while I'm getting my car repossessed because I'm burning through all my capital.
Oh no.
Exactly. It was a beautiful experience. I'm sleeping on the floor. My car's getting repossessed. I'm going down and hanging out in LA at this place called the Sofitel Hotel, the this comedy club. I think it's the Hollywood Comedy Club. I'm forgetting the name now. I'm having a great time. Literally a great time. But, you know, money's running out.
Like a sabbatical. You were taking a sabbatical, right? Yes.
Money's running out, so I start looking for jobs. And so my mom, who actually was a student at the college, my nephew was a student at the college. He was like, hey, Don, why don't you go check out, you know, see what kind of jobs they have there? I'm sure, you know, maybe they have something that you can do. So that's what I did. I went on. And here is this Makerspace project, this HSI, Hispanic Serving Institution, Title III, Part F STEM grant from the Department of Education. And it's a 5-year grant, that's $6 million. And they just lost their director and they needed to hire a new director. And they were two and a half years into the grant. So,
You don't need to go yet.
And I think they spent, they received $2.4 million and they spent $130,000 up to that point.
So there's lots of money left. I love it.
Yes. And so what the Department of Education likes to do, they like to send out notices when they see large available balances in your account to check that you're going to be finishing this project that they just parked a lot of income and capital into because other people can use that capital, right?
Yeah.
So I had a lot of things to do. Anyway, got to moving. And some of this is luck. We have fantastic staff there. We have fantastic students there. I have now referred to, I refer to community college students as Black Gold because when when we found oil, we realized, oh my God, that's just like new, like that's like Black Gold, right? Like, because you can make some money off of it. The talent that's available at community colleges, is genius level. And I say that because that's totally been the experience, right? It's absolutely been the experience and is what has put this Makerspace on the map. Out of all the work that we've been seeing happening in the region, we've particularly focused on community and building that community and a trusted space. I used to say safe space a lot, but and that can still work. I think though, it's more about the trust, because you can make a place safe. You can tell everybody, don't use those bad words and don't curse. Let's put up the different languages to make sure everyone feels inclusive. But if they can't trust you, it doesn't matter what you put up.
Safety is like a lower layer. You know, you got to have that safety there, but then you can put layer trust and other things on top of that because that's just a base thing. You need all those extra pieces. So you're right.
Yes, exactly. Thank you for giving me that. I'm gonna take that and run with that. By the way, when I start talking about it. What you see in my picture behind me, that's the 3D printing section or one section of the lab.
Sweet. How many printers do you have back there? It looks like 10 printers.
So we have 16 3D printers in total. So we have these open air printers, these open air 3D printers that we use for the early start of the prototyping. It's like it allows you to do the least expensive version of your prototype. And then we allow you to move to like higher resolution, quote unquote, more expensive 3D printers. So those orange like 3D printers you see right behind my head, those are the Form 3s. So that's a liquid resin printer that uses a laser to crystallize the liquid resin and builds the 3D model upside down. Mm-hmm. And that's the same printer they use to make the model, the demigorgon from Stranger Things. And And so we give this, we give students access to this technology, like, and then that big boy, this one, this side, this one over there, that's, we call him, it's the Stratasys industry size printer. You can print a helmet sized, a helmet. You can print a helmet inside of
it. So where's your Mandalorian helmet that you printed with that thing? Come on.
That's the next stop. That's, thank you. I appreciate that. Okay. I started with a samurai. I got a giant samurai mask. I should have worn it for the for this interview. But this is one section. We have a woodworking area where we have a CNC mill. We have a couple of CNC mills. We have a wood, a saw, a miter saw in this woodworking area. As you can imagine, it gets loud. We have air compressors in the area as well because we have two laser cutters. Right next to it, we have a 54-seat classroom that we retrofitted for gaming. It's our so we're creating the esports that we're launching this summer. Nice. So I got like
four. You're creating my dream apartment.
Yes, exactly. This is so when I walk into this gig, I'm like, wait, I'm gonna get paid. Wait, I'm sorry, you're gonna pay me for this.
So not work. This is fun, man.
Yes, right. The worst part is the reporting. Like that's basically I gotta write these reports, right? Like, that's the worst part.
Couldn't you like do a project where you invent the something that writes the reports for you? You know, some like some kind of eye that watches you.
That's what's needed because we still there is still a space, this, that opportunity in this area that we still don't know how to. Wait, this experience, right? Like we can track how much time you spend at a machine, and we can get like some qualitative, like you know, like oh, you know, how do you feel? You know, how do you feel about this like level of service? And you know, how well did we, you know, present this type of information? But in reference to like quantitative, like you know, moving from one skill set, we're not testing. Right. Like, so we can't say that, oh, they scored, you know, they came in with a 50% on 3D skills, you know, 3D printing skills. And now they're at 100. So we're still figuring out how to bridge that gap.
What kind of stuff are you creating? I want to hear about the kind of stuff that you're building.
OK, so one of the students figured out how to take MRI files and convert them into 3D printable files. Something that. Yeah, using open source software. She didn't even buy it, and it's a female student, right? Like how many checks do we make on the board there when you're talking about the stereotype of STEM, right? Mm-hmm. Our team, we have 18 student employees and five full-time staff members, and we are 50-50 in terms of female to male ratio. Mm-hmm. And so we went to, the next stop was taking her to a vendor's showcase based on Stratasys and their additional products. And while sitting in the meeting, they literally pull up a slide talking about the issue that hospitals are having where they need to convert MRI files into 3D printable files, but they don't have skill sets in-house. And they're asking the radiologist to learn how to do it. And they're like, no. Right. And so I'm sitting there with a community college student that has already done it on her own, right? Yeah. Using open source software. So that's one. Fantastic. We like to create those smaller retro gaming consoles. Right. Mm-hmm. And so using Raspberry Pis or these microcontrollers, so you can, you know, program. So that's where we want to teach programming using something fun. You can combine the woodworking area to cut out like a miniaturized arcade casing.
Right? Console. Yeah,
console. Thank you. We purchase the pieces sometimes like. for the prototype, we purchased the pieces. We have to be cognizant. We're not going to be able to do this for 10,000 students. So, so that's like build and break down. But then the students, you know, we'll help them with any projects they want to do on their own. We're creating a 3D printed headset to measure brainwaves. The idea is then to create a robotic arm and then to connect the two so that a 3D printed robotic arm, of course, and then to train machine learning, right? To train them to read those brainwaves in order to move that.
That's fantastic. And this is, you must have lineups of students wanting to get into this class, or is it available to everybody? Like, can anybody available, get in?
Thank you. Available to everyone, open to the community. I forgot to tell you that we do have a 38 foot long RV that we have for a
road trips.
It's a mobile makerspace. So we actually have two laser cutters, two vinyl printers. We have 10 3D printers on the bus. We have six design stations. We have, like this is crazy, right?
That is nuts. Yeah, we love it.
We drive this around to get K through 12 and we park this in front of their schools and have them bring in their classrooms, right? Like based periodically throughout the day. We also go to the larger like STEM events, right? To bring the community into space, into our static makerspace and let them know, you know, what resources they really have access to. We created an underwater robot. It's interesting. The first one got water. It got water into it. So that was funny. It worked for like 5 minutes and then it stopped working. And everyone wondered like, oh my God, what happened? And all checking the code and everything. And then when we took it apart, water fell out. And I was like, we have to make it waterproof.
Well, yeah, underwater robots waterproof. That's good.
Hence the need for prototyping, right? You don't want to go to market, right?
Well, experimenting. You're a scientist, right? You got to try it out. It's like, is this waterproof enough? I think so. I don't know. You got to put it in the water to find out, right?
Exactly. one of the things I'm really proud of is the actual, when you talk about connection to the community and like, it's like, so we do a lot of like, so MLK events, we 3D printed a bus of MLK. Nice. We created something, I don't want to pronounce this incorrectly, cellophane. So this is a process where you use layering to create from an image. And so when you look at the piece directly, it just looks like a 3D printed like mess. And then when you put it up to light, you can actually see the shadows and it actually looks like a 3D printed photo. Right.
Oh yeah, I've heard of those things. Yeah, very cool.
Yes, exactly. And so we created them for the MLK Day event. It's our one major fundraising event. Was it a fundraising event? For I don't want to misspeak, right? and so Cesar Chavez Day. That's another great event that allows the community to come in, utilize the space. Dia de las Muertes. I always pronounce that incorrectly. I apologize. One day I'll get it right.
I wouldn't pronounce it right. So right.
we made a 4 foot tall skull, one of those sugar skulls.
Yeah, one of the sugar skulls. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So you know, and that arms, also that thing sitting with all the wires going to it on that table behind me, over that shoulder. Is a supercomputer that we're building out of Raspberry Pis. So each of those nodes that you see stacking on either side is a Raspberry Pi. And so we 3D printed and laser cut that holding so that we can hold it. So we create like a hive basically of Raspberry Pis.
Jeez, you guys are on the cutting edge.
This is what, right? And so this is how you combine Africana with engineering. This is what happened.
When I went to school, we didn't have anything like this. I would like kill to have stuff like this at my school. That would have been amazing. The stuff you could build, what you could imagine and just create, it's just phenomenal. Wow.
So guess what that's going to allow us to do? We're going to now start toying with what? Cryptocurrencies. And so we can use this rig, this what we were trying to create as a supercomputer and turn it into a mining rig. for Ethereum, Litecoin, Cardano, right? Like we have all these coins that we can easily, that don't need as much computing power or to mine as Bitcoin, right? So we don't have to go there. We see this whole industry growing, and it's something that our students need to know about anyway. So we're going to take that on inside of the
wow. space. Yeah. Phenomenal. So you think that it's like your background sort of like perfectly positioned you to get to this spot, because you know what they say, like nowadays people are looking at humanities types degrees anyway. I mean, they're saying you get your tech skills through, you know, some specific training, but the humanity degree is the thing that really prepares you for life. So I think, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of degree you've got, if it's in some kind of humanities, I think it's even more powerful and probably more important to position you in the place that you're in to do the things that you're doing.
I would agree with that. Because I always say, you know, tech is tech. It's like reading an instruction manual, and then you have to like, you know, make up for when things don't go the way they said it would go, right? Right.
Yeah.
And it's coded that way, right? Yeah. So you don't expect it to change. But with people change every breath, right? And so dealing with our students as soon when you asked about, you know, people lining up, that's what started to happen. We were only open though for 3 months before the global pandemic shut us down.
Oh no, it's terrible. Yeah,
exactly. And so I also had 18 student employees thinking that, you know, planning on working this job. And so the great part about the college is that, you know, when COVID first hit and, you know, we had no like clear, you know, direction, we paid our student workers as they should have, right? And then, but then I was tasked with, well, you got to take that makerspace virtual. Does anyone know what a makerspace is? And then how do I take this thing virtual?
What you do is you take each one of those 3D printers and you send it out to people's houses, right? And they can print it, ship it to them.
So we did that with the microcontrollers.
See? Perfect.
Right. Yeah. So as long as it's small enough, it did get to the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it turned into. We started making kits. So we had a kit that made a hydraulic arm using syringes and tubing and water for the hydraulic part, right? For the power.
Interesting.
And then we used the laser cutter to cut out the wooden pieces and the wooden tabs that would be used to push to construct the thing. We did this for women in STEAM event. We also sent home, was it a Raspberry Pi or a
Raspberry Pi? Well, the Raspberry Pis are so small and cheap. You could send one to everybody, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? And so we had a fantastic time. We had professors on giving lectures, and then we would follow that lecture up with that hands-on experiential experience for the girls that were on the call. And so for the microcontroller, we actually sent a piano. So we taught them how to use a breadboard buttons.
We programmed the buttons.
Exactly, and program the buttons to be certain, notes, and taught them how to make a piano out of a Raspberry Pi and a breadboard.
Fantastic. See, somebody needs to take that and then turn it into a musical instrument, and then play it on YouTube, and then become like a huge YouTube star, but based on the equipment that you.
Right, and then turn that into an NFT, and then sell it on the exchange for $1.8 million.
Exactly where I was going with that.
Yes. So this has been one heck of a ride. It's been my dream. When my previous dream, I saw that turning into something I didn't imagine. I had to make my new goal, and my new goal was in 7 years to build a coral farm, to farm coral on the, you know, at the beach.
Wow,
somewhere.
You're a big man. I don't know how you get. how do you know, how did you, like, where did you get that dream from? I mean, it sounds like based on your background, it's like, it seems like a perpendicular. Where did that come from?
So you talked about the humanity part, right? Like, so I'm a big human guy, Like everything's about like humanity. I'm a big softy. I feel like, so there's this whole spiritual side of me that I didn't really understand because I just processed everything through zero and one, right? So if it didn't make sense, I kind of just threw it out. Or, you know, but quantum mechanics, nano. So I'm into nanotechnology, right? Like, so the spooky place, I understand the spooky place. Yeah. So that always gets me going with like vibration and energies. And so I found Seguru, right? So when I got to California, I found Seguru. He's one of the top 50 influential guys in India right now, right?
Nice. And, is that a guy named actually Guru or is he a guru?
Sadguru. His name is S-A-D-H-G-U-R-U. The reason why I have to think about it every time I spell it, right? That's why. and he breaks it down. He doesn't give you the woo-woo. So woo-woo is what's his name's term? You know who I'm talking about, right? That uses the term woo-woo. He's the other big guy in the spiritual science space. Deepak Chopra, right? So but I felt like he still was too much into the science for me. Like I can understand the stuff from the science part, but I need to understand it from the spiritual journey part. So Seguru gave me that side of the house. And so that's now has expanded me more to be focused more on the living as opposed to thinking through life and creating these big old plans. And so when I started to think about, well, what would really matter to me in the end, and it would be like, you know, this sounds cliche, and though saving the planet. And so it's like, well, how would you want to save the planet? And so I don't do anything without doing the research. So I'm like, okay. Right. Well, I know, you know, oxygen's an issue and we know the greenhouse effect is an issue. And I know that the coral reefs are like dying because of, that whole big problem with the icebergs melting in the north, pouring fresh water into the ocean, breaking down our transatlantic current, right? Like raising the ocean, right? All of that good stuff, right? Yeah. Killing off our coral reef. Coral reef is, I think, responsible for like 30%, the last time I looked at this, of like our global like oxygen supply. So with all of these tree planting projects, they still won't like hold a candle to what we will lose if we lose the coral reefs. So that's
exactly.
And so when I compared the problems and the problem sets and what would have the most gain, that was how I fell on that.
Fantastic. Do you know anything? Do you know anything about it? I mean,
I've been studying. So this is my pastime now, right? Okay. So as I'm doing all of this stuff, So I'm learning about coral, why they've been bleaching, what leads to it. It's actually because of too many nutrients. So it's weird. It's like an organism living within a plant. And so when the organism starts making, because the water actually is better for this organism, but not necessarily so for the plant. The organism starts overproducing what the plant likes to the point where it becomes sickly to the plant. So the plant
it's like overeating. It's gone to McDonald's so often, right?
Exactly. And spits it out. Right. And so it spits it out.
You know, Americans are getting fat. You know, the coral's kind of getting fat.
Right.
The food's too rich, man. You got to cut back. You got to go on a diet.
That's right. It's hilarious. And weirdly enough, there's some things that they're finding that if you break up the coral, similar to if you cut up like a starfish, you remember in the old days when they would tell you the stories in history class of fishing, they would cut up the starfish and then they would come back and there would be so many more. Well, they would break up the coral and you would come back and all of a sudden there's like the coral has grown 30 to 50% faster. And they're like, well, I don't understand why. Well, so these are the pieces that I'm going to use for the farm. And so now my focus is training myself on scuba diving and surfing.
I'm curious. So how do you protect the coral reef? I mean, how would you how would you actually, I mean, it sounds like we were saying before, it's like the food's too rich, but how do you get it less rich? Or do you have to break it up? Do you have to spread it out? I mean, what's the process?
Yeah, it's a couple of those, like, it's a combination of these things, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any real like silver bullet right now, because you're dealing with such a large like ecosystem. And so the farm is so that you can control the ecosystem, so that you can at least get a start of a growth. Also, you can use that controlled system to create resistant coral to their new environment, because some of this is just that they haven't had time to readjust. So if you actually start growing them from that new environment standard and then put them back in the environment, they should theoretically allow you to move forward.
So you're basically creating like a new kind of coral that can survive in the new environment.
Unfortunately, yeah. Right?
Nice. Like,
yeah.
It's fantastic. Wow. So did you ever think that you would be where you are today based on where you were?
No, I thought I was going to be dead. Like, I thought I was going to die multiple times.
Oh, Jesus
multiple. Christ. Dude, like, there's so many stories. So many stories.
But it's like, it still feels like your journey prepared you for where you are. I mean, it's like, did you notice that? Did you feel like you went from like a more spiritual, humanistic type of person to a less spiritual, humanistic type of person? And now you're sort of swinging back to yes, humanity again?
Because
the same kind of thing happened to me. But go on.
Yes. I would love to hear you, because that's exactly what I felt like. I felt like I lost myself. Yeah. And then now coming back and finding myself, it's exactly what you said. It does feel like there's this weird, like culmination of all the stuff that I had no idea would mean anything at this point now means everything to me. Right. And so,
because I was always like a techie. I was like, I read science fiction. I was wanted to, you know, come up with the future, you know, all technology, huge Star Trek fan. It was all tech, tech. And then I got into tech and I moved to Silicon Valley, and I was just doing tech so much. And eventually I got to the point where, like, wait a minute, you know, it's like the technology is not the problem. The technology is programmable. It's instructions. It's human beings that are behind all this that are driving everything. So it's like, a switch flipped in my head going, wait a minute, you know, we shouldn't be talking about the technology. The technology is boring. It's not exciting to me. And somebody goes to me, oh yeah, I get excited about AI, or I get excited about quantum, but it's just technology. There's no life to it. You know, and human beings, we have life, and it makes a huge difference.
Thank you. I totally agree. And then, so waking back up, like, I feel like, so, you know, I told you I was going to come back to, like, I have my child from my previous marriage, but I really feel like I found my twin flame. Like, I ran into an individual that can physically cause me like changes in my mental state or my physical state, right? Simply by standing around me. And we didn't know what was happening. We thought that we were getting sick or something. We literally thought it was like low blood pressure, because we would get like lightheaded. we were sitting in a Starbucks one day, and she like showed me a podcast in a public space. I started crying, right? Like, and she's sitting, this is when we first met. So she's sitting there looking at me.
You. It's funny how some things just touch you like that, and you don't see it happening. And it's almost like unconsciously happening, like without you even thinking about it.
Exactly. And so we've now combined the family. So we have a blended family now, three beautiful children. And this is, I can literally say that this has been my fantasy. This is like the fantasy life that if you gave me a comic book, because I'm a nerd, right?
You have a dream job. I gotta say, you have a dream job. It sounds like you have a dream life. So let's think about the future a little bit. So it's 2031. Where will you be? Are you gonna be scuba diving off the coast of Australia, or where are we gonna find you in 10 years?
Probably racing yachts based on that I purchased from the cryptocurrency or blockchain-based company that I'm building now.
So Larry Ellison is retired from yachting, and you're going to buy his yacht and repaint it, right?
Yes. we're gonna name the competition the Four Horsemen after my four brothers.
Nice. So, what do you think of all this nifty stuff that's going on? I mean, what's your thoughts?
On which part?
Well, I mean, are you gonna do the same thing? You're gonna create an NFT and sell it for billions, or I mean, what do you think of it?
So, cross-border payment. So, I totally believe in it. It is a brand new digital asset class. It is absolutely amazing. It takes the cap off. It removes the middleman. It's trustless. So, so if you are an independent person, which I am, right? If you do like to do it your way, this is the world for you to exist in, right? Open source coding. So yes, it would help to have some coding skills in this space. Mm-hmm. Do you absolutely need coding skills to make any type of capital from this space? No, you can pick your lane and you can get in that lane. I want to focus on cross-border payments, particularly in that new market that's being expanded in Africa. I got some things.
What do you say about people who are like, oh, it's too late for me to get into crypto? It's like, done. There's already too many investors in it.
Oh, this is just the beginning. I just read a metric that said 0.001% of the population actually understand what crypto is.
Yeah. Nobody gets it. But I mean, I remember over here, there's a coffee shop here that actually takes Bitcoin. And it's like, oh, can you imagine buying a coffee with Bitcoin? Like, what a tiny little percent.
Right. Oh, horror story. One of my employees, he used his Bitcoin to buy lunch at school.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He said at the time it was worth like $15. Jeez. Yeah, exactly.
Bad move.
Exactly. Yes. So I would say if you're not into crypto, get into it. It will change your life. It has the potential to change your life. Be careful. It is new. With the fact that it being new, there will be a lot of scam artists in this space as well. And it's currently not being regulated. It's in the process of being regulated, I would say.
There's a ton of coins out there. How do you know where to go? Do I buy Doge? Do I buy,
I'm putting this on the record. Do not buy Doge. Do not buy Doge. I think I figured out what they're doing. This
Elon says buy Doge.
I figured out what they were doing. They made it. It's like a dog in the stock market. My accent keeps coming out. And so it's like a dog stock. Like, so it'll just lock up your capital, but keep it there. You see, it keeps trading around like anywhere between like 5 cents and like 7 cents, if you will. But there's two individuals, two wallets that own 75% of the coins. It is nearly impossible for anyone else to make any type of real investment. So that's why I say, do not do Doge.
Okay, you can look at it in Doge, but like, okay, so you gave me a really good description there of something to stay away from. So what kind of crypto should I be buying? Like, if I wanted to get into it now, I don't know anything about crypto. What kind of crypto should I be buying? What should I be getting into?
Today, you go and buy Cardano. Its ticker or its coin is ADA, right? Cardano tomorrow will be making an announcement on its partnerships that it has with certain African countries on the 18th. Also, at the end of this month, it is completing its software development cycle named GoGAN, which will open it up to smart contracts and allow you to interoperate with any of the other altcoins on the market. And you're right, there are over. Say it again.
Is it based on Ethereum?
It's not. So interestingly enough, this gentleman is a co-founder of Ethereum, Charles Hodgkinson, I think you pronounce his name. He does a live YouTube cast twice a day, every day from Colorado, interestingly enough. But they built their ecosystem. So he's one of the co-founders and built the ecosystem to actually fix all of the issues that you're currently seeing Ethereum experience with, like network congestion, and it's what they call high gas fees. So whenever you use Ethereum to like trade currency, you can sometimes need to pay like $30 to send like $6.
Oh yeah, that's ridiculous. So, that's the one thing that it really pisses me off about Ethereum. That's why I don't have any. I've got some Bitcoin. I've got some Litecoin. I don't have any Doge. But where do I buy Cardano if I want to buy Cardano? It's not available on Coinbase or anything like that, right? Nowhere. Like, do I have to go to?
So interestingly enough, they just announced yesterday that it's going to be listed on Coinbase Pro. You can also purchase it from another exchange called Anchor USD. That's where I procured my Cardano.
So what? Tell me what's so amazing about Cardano.
So his philosophy on that company is all about, when you listen to him, it's all about not being owned by anything or anyone, right? He really focuses on freedom. And so he wanted to create an ecosystem of these like technology products that would allow you to do so, right? That's one of the reasons why they broke up from Ethereum. So another coin for you to look into is Polkadot. It's another co-founder of Ethereum. Ethereum had like 7. And they're all going,
man, what kind of a monster did I create with Ethereum? We got to do something better than that.
Right. Polkadot is huge. It's a little more expensive at like $30, I think, right now. You'll still be able to get Cardano today. The last time I checked today was $1.37. It might have gone up since then. Yeah, people are really trying to get in before this announcement. Like literally this morning at breakfast, my waiter said, I'm about to liquidate my Bitcoin in Ethereum and go all in on Cardano. So once he said that, I then opened up another position on Cardano.
But I mean, there's just so many coins going out there. What do you think is going to happen to the marketplace? Because there's just so many coins out there. The regular Joe on the street, they're confused. They don't know what to do. What's going to happen to crypto? I mean, I think it's probably eventually going to replace fiat currency completely. But I mean, when's that going to happen?
So you are absolutely right. I think we're going to be on a bull run for the next 8 years. I think right now, if you wanted to get into it, you would probably need to own or sign up for 5 different exchanges just to have access to certain tokens or coins, right? Yeah. Because each exchange makes its own choice on what coin it wants to list. That's why ADA wasn't on Coinbase, right? Another benefit, though, of this is that they are actually giving you high yield interest accounts, right? So Anchor USD, you can just park your fiat currency in a high yield account and make 8%.
Oh, really? And so you can just use the same account for fiat, and then can you just immediately buy anything you want at the same time because it's all in the same account?
That's exactly right. Yes.
Very cool.
So it creates this wallet for you, and you use the fiat in the wallet to make the other purchases. Yeah.
Can you also use it to buy stuff in stores, or is it just like fiat to crypto and back and forth?
Fiat to crypto currently. I think I saw an ad they were saying about getting a card, but I wasn't interested in the card. So I didn't look any deeper into that, but it looks like that's what they were moving towards, that you can get this card and then use your crypto wherever they accept crypto. Because I know, cool. I think it's MasterCard now that's doing that. And we're going to hear probably at the end of the month, we're going to hear about PayPal and that it's going to be accepting cryptocurrencies.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. So any other predictions for 2031? So you're going to be on your yacht, you're racing your yacht, and you've got this crypto company. Yeah. What else are you doing in 2031?
10 years. So going to a couple of, sending off a couple of kids to colleges. Probably going to some graduations.
And they're not going to take STEM classes, right? They're not taking STEM
You know, after I said that just now, I said, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to be graduating, right? Like, I don't know. They might go for some courses.
Yeah, whereas higher education might be completely different in 10 years, right?
Exactly. So I'll be celebrating someone's success, success. In the coral farm, we probably would have at that point planted let's say 10 acres worth of coral, and would have at that point have, oh, I didn't mention this, but I'm part of it, finished the Great Green Wall of Africa. So Great the building, Green Wall of,
what is that?
Yeah, so they're building, so they're trying to stop the desertification of the Sahara in Africa as it's growing. And so at delineation point between like north and south, they're creating a band of trees from the east coast to the west coast.
Wow.
And it's already been in place for 10 years.
I gotta research
10
this.
10 years. Dude, I'm an Africana. Like, I didn't know.
Wow, that's fantastic. I never heard of that. That's cool.
So now I want to build a tree planter for this thing. It's going across the desert. So I'm like, well, humans are going to have a really tough time doing this. But if we create a solar powered like rover that just rolls along, digs a little hole, plants a tree, moves forward. Yep. And so that's, you know, in the plan.
I love it. Yeah, especially considering it's going to be like the conditions are going to be terrible, right? Because it's just heat and everything. But that's fantastic. That's a great idea. So is that something you're inventing? I'm going to see your patent on it soon.
Exactly. Thank you for saying that. That is exactly right. That's exactly right. Yes.
Awesome. I love talking to you, man. Tell me, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Yes, Gmail. We're talking about emails here. Do we give out emails on this thing?
You're on LinkedIn, right? I can put in your profile and all that other contact information. So you're saying that everybody, so did you say that your lab's open? Like once all this stuff is gone, like the pandemic stuff's over, are you saying anybody in the community can come use the lab, or is it strictly for students at the school?
Yes, anyone in the community can come use the lab. And we've even seen in our virtual classes that now, so we call it K through gray, because we've seen like individuals that are like 70 plus.
Yeah, gray, I get it.
on our coding classes, they're learning how to code at 70, at 80.
Why not, right? What do you do? Why not? I mean, I'd love to do that. I already know how to code, but you know, I don't want to go back to it.
Right, exactly. So,
what is a young man's game now?
Exactly. So yeah, everyone can come in. I forgot the hours. At this point, let's say it's from like 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. or 4 p.m. or something like that during.
Yeah, well, I'll send people to your website so they can check it out. But do they need to call ahead, or do they just show up,
up. That's right. They show up, they sign in. We have a little kiosk. They'll put in the information, get a little ID card printed out for them, and then they continue to go back and forth. Any of their like initial prototyping stuff, we will supply, right? If they need like pieces of wood, if they need pieces of acrylic, if they just want to start 3D printing, they don't need to bring anything. They can just start learning as soon as they walk in.
I love it. Well, thank you so much. It was great talking to you. I'm going to set up the info and love it. Talk to you again soon, hopefully.
Thank you, sir.
Have a good one.
Bye now.
Bye.
You too.